Red Podcast.
It's Red Podcast, the marketing podcast for experts. David Hooper here. If you've got a message that you want to spread, if you've got a book, a podcast, a blog, a live event that you want to attract people to, this is the podcast for you, the marketing podcast for experts. Help you reach your audience, expand it, and deliver content that connects. All of my life, I have done my own thing when it comes to making money. I've talked about my gun show business when I was a kid. Two businesses, really. The first business, this is how I made the initial money, is that when a gun show would come to town, and there were plenty of them, because I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, and my uncle and my grandfather were involved in the business of guns. Not like arms dealers, but they would go around area gun shows and wheel and deal, baby. They would have a booth full of guns and ammunition. Buy low, sell high, kind of like a big flea market for gun enthusiasts. And what I would do is show up at these places. Usually they would be on a weekend. I would show up twice. I would show up during the load-in, and I would show up when everything was over. I would help these guys unpack their trailers, vans, cars, whatever they had, like a gun bellhop, and I would make tips for that. And then when it was done, if there was anything left over, I would help them pack up. So I was making money before, and I was making money after the show. During the show, what I would do is I would go spend that money buying low and selling high, just like my relatives did. I wasn't buying guns. I was maybe 12 years old when I started this. What I would do is I would buy knives, or I would buy throwing stars or that kind of stuff, you know, badass stuff for a kid. And then I would take it to school and sell it for more money. So I'd buy these cheap Chinese knockoffs of like what they call a Rambo knife, like a big hunting knife. Sometimes they'll call them survival knives. Probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 inch blade, a handle that you would unscrew, and on the inside it had like matches or a compass or, I don't know, a saw, like one of those chains that you could take and cut down a tree. Anyway, survival knives. I'll buy low and sell high. So I'm somebody who has always seen the opportunity of doing that, taking something that you've got that other people want. And sometimes it's literally just taking it from one place to the other. It's taking it from Nashville to Memphis. For example, if you were a guitar teacher, they say experts arrive with a suitcase. Oh, Nashville guitarist. In Nashville, you couldn't get somebody to piss on you if you were on fire. But in Memphis, like, oh man, I want to learn this Nashville sound. Okay. And vice versa. You have that as an expert. It's something that you take for granted, something that's all around you. You take it somewhere else, you can make more money with it. You bring personality with it. You bring a point of view with it. You basically make yourself a celebrity who's delivering that message. You will make more money. I've been doing this a long time, and I'm not talking about going back to the gun show when I was 12 years old. My real company, that started in 1995, so now I'm 25 plus years in. And I do think this sometimes. I think to myself, can I really keep this up? Am I going to keep doing this another 25 years? Am I going to die with my boots on? I've got ideas still, but I know what it takes to do them now. When I was in my 20s, 1995, I would just jump into things. I started the second largest music business conference in the country over pizza. Like, oh yeah, let's do it. Next thing I know, I've got this big conference that I own. I think about things a little bit more before I jump into them. Last year, I got a book by John Jantz. It's called The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, 366 Daily Meditations to Feed Your Soul and Grow Your Business. I got it because, again, I think about these things. Am I going to keep this up? What do I want the next 25 years to look like? Is it going to be different than the previous 25 years? Or how is it going to be the same? I thought, well, daily exercises, that might be helpful for me to get clear on what it is that I want to do for the next 25 years. I had known of the author John Jantz from the late 90s. I'd actually had a program of his called Duct Tape Marketing. So I finished it up, 366 daily meditations, and I got together with John to talk about his longevity, to talk about this, what we call self-reliance, and a self-reliant entrepreneur, and a lot of things related to this. We talked about sticking with something. We talked about the point of view that I'm talking about, because that's going to get you more money. We talked about spreading your message in different mediums, the mission, the evolution of an expert business. He had something pretty similar to what I did. It's one-on-one, then group, and now he's doing licensing. We talked about licensing, being impatient. We talked about the process of writing a book. You, as somebody who is an expert and has an expert business, I think you are going to find this very interesting. I'm bringing 25 years of perspective into this. John, 12 years before me, he's got 37 years at this point. Quick heads up before I play it for you. There were a few audio issues that we ran into when we recorded this. I'm not sure what was going on. Sometimes, you know, we're doing remote recording, things happen. It's okay, not great. It's such important content, though. And I know you hear this a lot when you hear disclaimers like this. Well, I hope you'll forgive me. The audio is not that great, but that's the truth. This is a guy who's been around for a long time. He's got some great information. I hope you'll stick it out. Here's my conversation with John Jantz. I heard about you for the first time in the late 90s. I bought something called Duct Tape Marketing, and it came in a 3-ring binder, came with CDs.
Oh, yeah.
Way back when we used to use CDs.
You probably sent me a check for it too, didn't you?
I may have. And I thought that would be an interesting hook for this talk with you. You've got a book called Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, which I went through last year, 366 because of leap year, 366 exercises. I went through the whole thing. When I saw you had done that, I said, you know, I've got to talk to John once I'm done with this. And I want to talk about his self-reliance and his longevity, really. I've been around for a while too. You've been around and I want to keep being around. I thought I would get some wisdom from you because our listeners do as well. So let's talk about how things were back then. Just a quick minute or two on that. You were, I guess, self-publishing your information via the 3-ring binder. And
yeah. I mean, it's, as you alluded to, I mean, not only did we not have e-commerce, we didn't really have the internet. You know, I started my own marketing consulting practice. I think I'm coming up on 37 years. You know, did like a lot of people. I just hustled work and did whatever, no real plan. But at some point, I decided I really loved working with small business owners, but they were really tough to work with. And so I said, well, I gotta create a way where I can just, instead of making it up every time, you know, walk in and say, here's what I'm going to do. Here's what you're going to do. Here's what it costs. You want it? And to my surprise, it was very well received because, you know, marketing was getting more frustrating, at least getting more complicated for small businesses. So somebody kind of preaching marketing as a system was sort of music to their ears. And I documented that. I created it almost like a product. And so I had to give it a name. I called it Duct Tape Marketing to be more brand sounding. This is when people were starting to just dip their toe in the water online. And so I started just publishing information about what I was doing. And that, you know, 25 years later, turned into actually my 7th book and a network of independent marketing consultants around the world that licensed my system and my approach to small business marketing. And I have had a podcast since about 2005. I think I'm on episode 3000 and something. So just keep plugging along with this kind of same point of view that marketing is a system.
Do you think that it is easier to make a name for yourself now, or was it easier back then? Because on one hand, it's easier than ever to put out a book.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it seems like because it's easier than ever, there are a lot of books, there are a lot of consultants, there are a lot of podcasts. I'd love to know your thoughts on how you've managed to make a name for yourself and how you're continuing to evolve, because it's one thing to have a name for yourself, but it's another thing to keep it for as long as you have.
I think it's gotten a lot harder just for the reasons you said, because the barrier to entry is so low in a lot of ways. I mean, anybody can publish a book. It's not saying it's not a good book. I'm just saying it really used to, you know, there was a barrier to being invited in some ways to write a book. There are billions of blogs. When I started mine in 2003, there were, you know, 24. Again, I think that you know, fighting through the clutter now has made it much harder. And consequently, I think that's why you see, you know, I was able to claim the space small business marketing. Well, today that's a very large space. So I think you see a lot of people that are succeeding, you know, are coming up with an angle. They're coming up with a niche maybe, or they are coming up with a point of view that really differentiates them. And I would say that if I were going to point to anything, that's probably been the key to any success that I've had, is that instead of jumping on this platform or this new tactic, it was really a point of view that I have said now, you know, 6 billion times that marketing is a system. It starts with strategy before tactics. And crazy as that sounds, that's still sort of a unique approach in the world of small business and in the world of marketing consulting. I think that's the real key, is have a point of view that differentiates you, because the tactics will come and go.
What do you think about personality? Because it's one thing to have the point of view and the system, if you will, and also a good name. I mean, Duct Tape Marketing was a great name. I'm sure that's what caught my eye, because I was like, yeah, I feel like I'm MacGyvering this thing.
Yep.
But at the same time, like these days, I think about Instagram and even podcasting. There were a lot of guys back in the time that we're talking about in the turn of the century here that they were good at writing, but they did not translate well when they had to be more exposed to video, to podcasting. Do you have thoughts on that? About bringing your own personality in, and how much of it that you do bring in?
I mean, I guess there's theater, you know, where we all see people that are, you know, bringing this larger than life personality, which may or may not be authentic or true to them, but it sells. I think the thing that sells, as long as you can find your tribe, find your people, is authenticity. And I think that's the only thing, that's my only voice, has been, hey, I'm a guy from the Midwest who thinks about, you know, practical ways to do things. And I think that I've never, or at least I've attempted to never waver from just being who I am, but also caring deeply about the people that I serve and what I'm doing.
I love that attitude, just the showing up consistently, having the system, sticking to what works. I think a lot of the competition that you face probably has the flashy stuff, like, hey, this is the latest thing and this is going to solve your problem. And I think it's easy to get caught up in shiny object syndrome. Have you ever thought about doing that? Have you ever been kind of distracted by shiny objects when it comes to changing your message or even the tactics that you use to promote your message?
I suppose I have, but certainly not intentionally. Doesn't sell as well in some circles. Some younger folks coming up, or some of the all online, all digital, you know, folks that are tackling the latest TikTok or Clubhouse or whatever it may be.
Right.
You know, I still feel like who I serve is true small businesses. And so I'm never going to go out there. And in fact, we have a network of consultants. And, you know, frankly, if I don't think that what we have to offer is going to actually be good for them, I won't take their money. My mission is to serve as many small businesses as possible, not to necessarily get rich. I'm never going to promise somebody that if they follow me or they use what I use or do what I say to do, that they're going to get rich. And unfortunately, there will always be a market for people who want to get rich quick. And so it's kind of sad to see some of that that's still sold to today. It was sold 30 years ago. It just came in a magazine ad, or it came in a 12-page sales letter that you got in the mail.
Right.
That latest sort of hustle, you know, will be with us till the end of time, I suppose.
Let's talk about your evolution as an expert, because it sounds like you were doing one-on-one work and moved into what I call one-to-many, like publishing. Those are the first couple of steps.
Absolutely. I mean, my very first thing was just, you know, what do you need? Sure, I can do that. That was my business model.
Yeah, I think a lot of people start out like that.
And then, as you alluded to, I mean, you can only scale that so far. And I never really had the vision of I'm going to have a 75-person digital agency or agency of any type. I always kind of liked to stay lean and be able to do what I wanted to do and choose who I wanted to work with. So to me, that the path of being able to then sell products, and I mean, I had courses before, you know, they were cool. And so to be able to do some of that stuff just seemed to me like the perfect way to control my own destiny, build a larger footprint, impact more people without necessarily having to, you know, take on, you know, managing a large organization.
How did it transition then into licensing your content so that other people could I guess they're scaling for you. They're going out and doing that one-on-one work, it sounds like.
That distribution model really allowed me to impact, you know, 10, 20, 30 times the amount of businesses by kind of transferring my knowledge and my approach to other people so they could do it simultaneously. But in a lot of ways, it kind of came accidentally. I mean, what I created was a course, was a, you know, here's how to do it. Here's a system. And obviously it's evolved as, you know, marketing channels have evolved and new platforms have come up. But that approach was something that was very packageable. You know, maybe in the back of my mind somewhere, I said, I need to start this network. But I actually just started hearing from people who said, hey, we want to do what you're doing, you know? And so I said, okay, then I'm going to create this network.
I work with a lot of podcasters. And one of the things that I have noticed is that a lot of them become podcast consultants rather quickly.
Yep.
And it sounds like that's the opportunity there. If you are in a situation like that, where somebody is saying like, oh, how can I do what you do? Or they are trying to do what you do. You're able to license them, I guess, the content that they use for training, the content that they use for workshops, for live speaking.
Yeah, that's absolutely how we started. But it really, what's been kind of fun about this is that's really only an aspect of it. I mean, we do call it licensing, but it's really more of a network. It's almost like a membership organization now as well, because the folks in our network work together. They collaborate. We do live events. It's more than a training or a licensing. There are a lot of those kind of things out there. But this is all of that with community.
I want to try to break this down so I understand. So they're going out and they are spreading the word of John Jans.
Yes and no. I mean, it's really the duct tape marketing system.
Okay.
So they are using a methodology, and in some cases heavily branded, in other cases, you know, in the branding's in the background because they want it to be, it's a tool set that they happen to use. But there's no question our approach is a huge differentiator.
Yeah, well, that shows the fact that I think they're selling John Jans. That shows that I associate you with duct tape marketing so much.
Right.
So you've done a good job of branding that, because you're the duct tape guy. When I actually saw Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, I said, well, that's interesting. That's a step for this guy, because I'm so used to your brand. When you read this, though, you see that there's a connection to what you're talking about, because it is entrepreneurship. It is, I guess, helping entrepreneurs and helping small business owners to survive or even thrive, to make more money and to handle their marketing, because I think this self-reliance is a huge part of it.
The title borrows heavily from Ralph Waldo Emerson's essay, Self-Reliance. His brand of self-reliance was really more about trusting yourself so thoroughly that you were actually able to, rather than go it alone, you're actually able to be empathetic and extend trust that everybody else was kind of in their own, on their own path, but that we're all connected. All humans, all living creatures are connected in this big bowl of soup. Ryan Holiday is a good friend of mine who has kind of taken on the mantle of stoicism in our generation, at least of writing. And I kind of kid and say that stoicism, as opposed to transcendentalism, stoicism is a little more bro-ish than transcendentalism anyway.
Yeah.
But the book, you know, I actually take work from the Transcendentalists, which was a period in American history in the mid-19th century. I have writings from many, many authors that people would recognize because we read their work in school, you know, Emerson, Thoreau, Mark Twain, Louisa May Alcott. That band of literature really speaks to me, and so I wanted to capture it and curate it, and then every day I give sort of contextualize it with my journey and then give you a question every day. And so this book is actually my sixth book. You know, all my other books were very squarely marketing books, very squarely how-to books. I wanted to write a why-to book that kind of reflected my personal journey. And, you know, let's face it, probably a lot of my personal beliefs come out in here, although I'm not preaching or shoving anything down anybody's throat. I just know that for me, a great deal of my journey has been one of personal development. That's actually one of the best things about being an entrepreneur, is I think it's still one of the greatest personal or self-development programs ever created, if you know, go to work on yourself. And ultimately, I think that that's a real key to building a business that brings you joy as well.
I was just going to say that. I think that because I went self-employed, I was in my mid-20s. When I couldn't stand it anymore. So I was like, I'm on my own. And I think now at 48 years old, I've learned so much from the process of the last 25 years that I would never have had the opportunity to. And I think that the self-reliant entrepreneur, one of the reasons that I got it is because I push up against that stuff every day. I think people think that it's going to get easier, and not that there's not ease to it, but it is something that I have to wonder about. Like, can I keep this up? I'm curious if you also, because you've been 37 years, you said.
Yes.
Do you push up against that as well? Have you found that it ever gets easy?
A couple things to answer that question. I really love what I do. And I think that that certainly helps. I mean, there have been times I've felt a little stuck. I felt a little like things are, you know, are dragging. But I kind of like the chase. I'm insatiably curious by nature. And so I love new things. I love figuring out when some new platform comes along, you know, how it might apply or fit in into my work. So I think that those two aspects probably don't make this a drudgery. I mean, I'm 60 years old and still loving what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm less and less involved in the day-to-day of our organization. But to some degree, I'll continue to do something, you know, for many, many years. I wouldn't say that it necessarily gets easier. It evolves. It changes. One of the things that I tried to bring through in this book, because it's a calendar, it's a daily book, is that I organize the themes and the content actually around the metaphor of seasons. And obviously in a calendar book, that metaphor is kind of there for the taking. I feel like I've experienced many seasons, and, you know, it's not like an annual thing. You know, it's there. I can point to 5 or 6 times throughout my career where something big occurred, either that sort of forced a change, or that a new season of, you know, came that presented a new opportunity. And I think, like a lot of the traditional seasons, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, you've got your kind of spring where things look really, you know, they're exciting, they're happening, and then summer comes along and it's like, hey, you know what? I think I got this figured out. You know, this is going to work. And then fall comes and the leaves start falling off. You know, and that's kind of been what I've experienced. It's like, now, okay, we've got some momentum, but now, like, the problems are starting to show up. I can't keep, you know, my arms around everything anymore. But one of the things that we know from nature is that those leaves falling off the trees are planting seeds. I just think that there are more of those kind of cycles that happen in the longevity rather than just some sort of straight, you know, linear path.
I'm curious about those personal seasons that you talked about. You said 5 or 6 times, and I've certainly have them. Yeah. I'm still having them. And it usually goes like this. It usually goes kind of like you said, I think I've got this figured out, and yep, I get comfortable for a little bit and maybe spend a little too much money. And then it turns out I don't have it figured out like I thought. But what I do understand, I love that how you explained it, that I've been at it long enough. I know that it goes up and it goes down and that I'm going to be okay. What are those elements that you faced along your 37 years of doing this?
If there is an aspect that gets easier, you start trusting the process.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that, you know, early on when I'd want, it's like, I got this opportunity, I'm going to chase it, you know, this is going to happen. And then it didn't. And I was sad. I'd failed, you know, that didn't work. And then you start realizing that, like, something even better is around the corner.
Right.
And had you taking that one thing, this other thing wouldn't have been available. And so, yep, I think you start relaxing and going, okay, that wasn't meant to happen, I guess. What's supposed to happen? And you know, some people maybe call it intuition. But, you know, I think you start relaxing a little bit and kind of letting the things you can control be present and letting go of the things you can't control.
One of the things I've found is that when I push too hard, it almost always backfires.
Yep.
There's a tendency to force things. And I think that when I look at myself as an entrepreneur in my 20s, I'm like, yeah, I just didn't want to work for somebody else. I just wanted to do what I was doing. But it's much more different now that I've got a family and a bigger house. And, you know, in some ways, I'm scared of losing some things. And in other ways, I feel like I'm easing into it. I feel like all of it's a blessing. I'm so glad you're saying what you're saying, though. It's that you still like it. You're still engaged in it. You've got the ability to focus on what you want and let the day to day be handled by other people. And it's still entertaining, but it can be still scary at the same time too. So I'm glad you're acknowledging that as well.
I'll tell you, one of the things I've experienced is most entrepreneurs are very impatient. And just as you alluded to, you know, a lot of times we want things to move faster. We want that deal. You know, one of the things that I think that I've developed over time is to actually recognize even when I'm procrastinating or when I'm stuck. Sometimes it's because I don't want to take the next move. Sometimes it's because I shouldn't. And I think that kind of getting in touch with sort of the waiting for the right moment. I can't tell you how many times, even in book ideas, my last book, I signed a contract March 1st, 2020, about 2 weeks later, the country went into lockdown for the first time, and I had no idea what I was going to write about. Now, fortunately, when it's your seventh book, publishers aren't as concerned about what you're going to write about. They
trusted you. Hey, I'm John Jantz. Give me a deal. And they trusted you to come up with a topic?
I had a one page, here's what I'm thinking about, but I will tell you, it changed dramatically.
Oh yeah. The book you start is never the book you finish, right?
Well, in this case, particularly because, it was hard for me to get started because everything was colored by what was going on, at the moment in my business and with my clients and network. And I didn't want to write a, marketing in the time of COVID book. I didn't want it to come out that way. What did occur is not what I thought it was going to be, but I'm really proud of the book and what I think is going to be an innovation in at least in my body of work when it comes to marketing.
So that book, Ultimate Marketing Engine, that's coming out soon. Can we talk about your book process? That's about 18 months, it sounds like, from the time you sign the contract to the time it's available. Is that pretty standard?
It still is, which is a little frustrating because I don't think it should take that long. That's been about the cycle I actually write my books pretty quickly. Some people take 2 years to write a book. I mean, I take 4 or 5 months to write it, to actually turn the manuscript in. Then the publisher takes a year to crank it out. I will say that my last book, The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, Wiley cranked it out in about 6 months after I turned it in. So that was my fastest experience.
Well, that's a business publisher. Maybe they understand nonfiction authors a little bit better.
And sometimes these publishers get set on how many books they want to put out in what kind of window. And so sometimes they just put things off because, fall, if it's not going to be ready in April, then they're going to wait till September, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Or Tim Ferriss is coming out that week. We better wait too so he can sell all his copies.
Well, I did see that Amanda Gorman's first book is coming out the same day as my next book. she was the poet laureate that kind of wowed people at the
inauguration. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's going to be hard to get press that week. But you're in a long-term game.
I guarantee you that they have moved her pub date up. I guarantee
you. Oh, yeah. I was in the music business for so long. And I remember one time, this is back probably around when I was ordering your duct tape marketing binder. We had an album to release and we got behind the Spice Girls or something in the manufacturing. They said, no, sorry, listen, it's going to be another 3 weeks because we've got to do 20 million Spice Girls records. And there was nothing you could do about it. We don't have that anymore. Fortunately, we've got on demand. We've got some other options for print.
Yeah.
It still is not easy with so much noise, as you alluded to. I love it that you can knock out a book in 4 to 5 months. I think that's just incredible. Can you talk about being focused on writing? Because everybody listening to this podcast is an expert in some sense. And we've all heard that you need to do a book. You need to do a book. It's not easy. My last one took 4.5 years. It wasn't because I was working on it every day, but a lot of it were the delays that you mentioned of just having to take a step back. But it sounds like if you're doing 4 or 5 months, that you're pretty focused during that time.
Couple things, particularly if you have a traditional publishing deal. I mean, you sign a contract, they give you some money, and then they tell you when the book's due. And there's all kinds of penalties if you don't turn the book in. I don't know if they're going to enforce many of them, but it's in the contract.
Sure.
So that's a deadline, so that, a lot of people, that gets them off their butt pretty fast. The other thing too is, I don't write research books per se. I don't go out and do all kinds of interviews and all kinds of research or have a big study going or something for my books. I essentially write based on what I'm experiencing. So I guess that's research in some forms.
Yeah. Time in the game is your research.
A lot of times I'm just writing about, here's what I did. You try it. It might work for you too. That's what it comes down to in some cases is I'm constantly developing things for my work and then I just write about them.
You've self-published at least one book that I'm aware of.
I self-published a book that I thought was just going to be too much of a niche topic. It's called SEO for Growth.
Right.
What I wanted to do was demystify, you know, it's not a technical SEO book. It's really more of a marketer's handbook for SEO. I just see so much under the banner of SEO that is almost intentionally confusing. And so I wanted to break it down and say, look, if you're going to hire an SEO person, which in some cases, you know, certain industries, certain types of businesses certainly need that, at least know what you're buying, was really kind of my, you know, attempt in that book.
Self-publishing is actually great for something like SEO because it does change a lot.
That's right.
And you have to get it out quickly.
Yeah.
Why not self-publish some of these other books? Talk about the pros and cons and why you decided to continue to deal with traditional publishing, even though self-publishing, obviously, you know how to do it.
Well, the biggest thing that having a publisher like HarperCollins or Wiley, Thomas Nelson Portfolio published a couple of my books, is there's no question there's an element still of cachet, whether it's true or not, that's supposedly a stamp of credibility.
Right.
Well, along with that, you know, comes sort of built-in distribution. They obviously also handle the editing and the cover design and the copy editing and the printing. You know, those are all things that, as you alluded to, can be done now. You can hire all of that out. I've just chosen to continue to publish books that way for a lot of what I see are the conveniences, but also cachet of coming from one of those publishers as well. You know, the bottom line is no matter how you publish, a great deal of the sales are going to be on the author. At least the first, I think it's Seth Godin that said, you know, the first 10,000 copies of the book are on you. Everything after that is really on the market and the publisher's distribution. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. With the exception of, I mean, it always, you know, I sometimes study books that just go crazy. Sales-wise, and you look at it and you go, really? You know, what caught people's attention? I had somebody on my podcast recently that's written a book on gratitude. It's a lovely book, and it's just she had no. I mean, she came out of nowhere. She's a psychiatrist, psychologist, and does, you know, work with folks, you know, on helping them kind of gain more self-confidence. And she just wrote this book on gratitude, and I don't know, Oprah or somebody found it, and so
doesn't hurt.
Absolutely blew up, and it's, you know, it's in the top a couple hundred on Amazon, you know, now for a couple months running.
I think though, just to wrap up the book topic though, with her and with you, it's time in the game. If you are there working one-on-one with clients, or if you are there for years and years doing this stuff, that is going to be a book that connects so much better, because good marketing, we used to say this, that good marketing only makes things fail faster. Remember when we used to worry about the opening weekend for a movie? And if it wasn't good, and once the word got out, your movie's dead. But everybody would go there that opening weekend if it was hyped. And we don't, with Amazon reviews and everything else, it seems like everybody's got a platform to talk your book up or tell people how bad it is. And people will do both.
It's funny. It seems like, and maybe this is an age old thing, but it seems like of late, pre-COVID, at least when we used to go to movies, I would always worry when I'd see this big name movie running a whole bunch of ads. I was like, oh crap, this must not have fared well in the previews, you know, because the movie with those name stars in it should do just fine on its own.
Yeah, they're desperate to make that money back quickly.
Or it actually gets out, yeah.
I love what you're doing. I think that one of the biggest takeaways is that you just show up every day, and you have for 37 years. And that's how I found out about Self-Reliant Entrepreneur. I don't even remember where I heard you talking about it, but I knew the name John Jans. I was like, okay, I knew you from your reputation and from Duct Tape Marketing and the referral book that you have. I was like, I'm going to do it because I think this would be a fun experiment for me to go through. I think that's a huge lesson. Just keep showing up and eventually you become legendary. I certainly saw that in the music industry. There are ups and downs and nobody will book you in the downturn. And the next thing you know, you're a legend. I think as entrepreneurs, we go through that. One of the reasons I think people hire you, you show up, you've been here and they know you're going to be here. So there's something to be said about that when it comes to being an expert and being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, there's no question. Consistency is a big part of it, but I don't just show up because I'm a glutton. I mean, I show up really because I love it. I love what I do. I can't think of a time where I've gone through an extended period thinking, oh, it's Monday, you know, yeah. or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that's obviously what helps. And I'm hokey as it sounds. I'm very connected to who I'm helping. I love small business owners. I really believe in the, you know, the idea of, you know, the them being true American heroes, worldwide heroes, but certainly the hero of pretty much every economy, whether it's an election year or not. I believe that to be true. And so, you know, if I can help a small business owner get their business going and in effect get their life back in some cases, then, you know, that's what makes me think.
I love that so much. That I think wraps it up in such a nice bow, and just that you're thankful for it. You seize the opportunity, and you see the opportunity as well, that not everybody gets to do what we do, which is doing what you want to do. And if anybody's worked a job, or maybe you're working a job right now, you know how awful that can be. I'm just thankful not to have to do that. And that's enough for me.
Yeah. Amen.
Well, John, thank you so much. It's Duct Tape Marketing, not duct tape with a K.
DUCTTAPE.
Marketing.com and John Jantz on Amazon. There's some great books there. That right there is a great lesson for entrepreneurs to look at the difference between the self-publishing books that you've done, the difference between the major publishers that you've done, and just see what longevity looks like. And all of that is available to us. Got to go for it. John, thank you for being here on Red.
It's my pleasure. It was fun.
That's it. The conversation with John Jantz. Definitely take a look at the books he has done. Take a look at his website, Duct Tape Marketing. If you need a good template from somebody who's been in the expert business for a while, I think John is an excellent one. He just sticks to what he knows. He sticks to what he does. He's not flashy. He shows up every day. And I've seen this in so many different industries that I've worked in, certainly the entertainment industry. It's very easy to go with what he called the shiny object syndrome, going for what's shiny, going for the next big thing. It doesn't work. You do what brought you to the table. The acts from the 70s that might have had a disco record. Carly Simon talking to you. Seriously, Carly Simon had a disco record. She's not a disco artist. She's a singer-songwriter. Kiss had a disco record. In the 90s, hair bands like Skid Row had grunge records. Warrant, grunge records. Think about that when it comes to your business. Do your thing. If you keep showing up, you will outlast all the trends, all the fads. You'll be known for something very specific, and you're going to have success with it. So check out what John is doing. It's exactly that. Duct Tape Marketing. Look at his books on Amazon. If you want more from me, redpodcast.com/subscribe is where to get it. Red, like the color, R-E-D, podcast.com/subscribe. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode.